Let us pause in life's pleasures and count its many tears while we all sup sorrow with the poor. There's a song that will linger forever in our ears. Oh, hard times come again no more. 'Tis the song, the sigh of the weary. Hard times, hard times come again no more. Many days you have lingered around my cabin door. Oh, hard times come again no more.
Some of the most hard-hit folks in this pandemic are those in the arts. Theaters, concert halls, and many cultural offerings are suffering great financial hardship without an audience to attend in person. That also goes for the Guthrie Center in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. The Guthrie Center at the Old Trinity Church was founded by Arlo Guthrie to honor the legacy of his parents. The Guthrie Center seeks to cultivate cultural preservation, promote educational achievement, and foster community outreach to meet the ongoing needs of the community. However, since the pandemic began, the Guthrie Center has struggled to keep up financially. Alan Chartok sat down with Arlo Guthrie recently to learn more.
Well, here I am with one of my favorite people in the whole world, Arlo Guthrie. Arlo, I met somebody the other day, and she said, "This is my son, Arlo."
I said, "You did?
Is that named after Arlo Guthrie?"
Oh, my God. Well, you know, I'm used to getting plants and cats and dogs, and every once in a while, there's a kid that comes along that is named Arlo, and it's just so weird because it used to be a very rare name, and now it's not as rare as it once was, so things are changing.
Yeah, well, what a compliment to you that the world is going to be populated by little Arlos.
Oh, my God.
When you ask them, they say, yeah, after Arlo. And when the name is used just Arlo, when they just say Arlo is performing here and there, there's no question who it is. It's you. So that's extraordinary.
What can I tell you? I mean, it's just one of those crazy things that have happened over the last 50 years. As a matter of fact, I remember the first guy when I was dealing with the draft board in New York. I went to a counselor, and the counselor was a Quaker guy, part of the Friends, you know, down in Pennsylvania. And I walked into his office and sat down at his desk, and he had a nameplate, and his name was Arlo. And I couldn't believe it. And he couldn't believe that I had walked in there, and he didn't know me as a performer. He just knew that we shared the same very rare first name.
Where does that name come from? Do we know what the derivation of it is?
When my mother was in elementary school, when she was a little girl, there was a series of books that were passed around in elementary schools across the country in those days, and they were a series of books called the Arlo books, and they were about a little kid in Switzerland or something like that who was the prince to some kind of, you know, small kingdom, and his evil aunt and uncle did away with his parents, and so he went into hiding, and he changed his name from Orlando to Arlo. And so this was a series of adventures that took place, and my mother drew a picture of it when she was in school, and my mother saved every freaking thing. And so years later, she's walking down the beach, she's pregnant with me, and my father looked exactly like the character she had drawn in the book. And she went back to the house, and sure enough, she had saved it. And there he was. She had drawn my father in the same shirt, the same outfit, the same curly hair, the same beach. And they decided they had to name me Arlo because of that.
Well, you think of it. I know you're not going to like this, but when you say Woody, if you say to somebody, okay, Woody, does anybody have any question of who we're talking about? We're talking about your dad. Okay, you say Arlo. I don't think many people have any question that it's all you've done for the name Arlo what your old man did for Woody. Amazing.
I haven't thought about it, you know, but obviously, I mean, unless you're friends with Woody Harrelson or something, that may be true.
Yeah, those were all temporary interlopers, however. There's only one Woody. So let's get on to the Guthrie Church, which is so important. You know, I live within walking distance, and I love it. And it is really brought folk music, and including, frankly, my kind of folk music to the Berkshires. And it is people give up big gigs to come and play there. I know that because I've talked to them, and we've put some of them up. People like Tom Paxton come and others. It's amazing. It's an amazing place. Now, everything is closing up now. We haven't had a concert there for a long time.
Right.
What are the consequences?
Well, the consequences are the same for the center as it is for me personally. We haven't done a gig since early March, and we've been at home, and the Guthrie Center has had to close its doors because the state of Massachusetts, in coordination with the federal government, whatever local government is involved, decided that all the venues should shut down. And that includes the big ones like Tanglewood, but it also includes us. And we have had to shut the doors. And because it's been going on for so long, we've had to essentially lay off everybody. Everybody's on unemployment, including me at this point. And we're looking at that door shutting fairly soon. The limit for the time that you can be on unemployment is going to run out, and God knows what everybody's going to do. So one of the things we decided to do was to do an online fundraiser for the church, just like, you know, a million other people in our shoes are doing. I'm getting requests from venues all over the country, from not-for-profits all over the country. Just add a few words, you know, send us a video, homemade stuff, and we're in that boat. So we put together as best we could, and as socially distanced as we had to be, one of these, well, I guess it's a online video something or other, that will go out, and we're trying to raise enough money to keep the Guthrie Center going in terms of, you know, the needed maintenance. I mean, just to stay there, even if you're not doing anything. Somebody's got to cut the lawn. Somebody's got to, you know, fix the holes in the roof. People have to do that stuff whether you're working or not. Otherwise, the cost of doing it goes exponentially up when you finally get to reopen. So in this interim time, we're trying to do a fundraiser that will help us through, and we're doing the same thing for other organizations.
Arlo, how dire is the situation? I mean, you've got a family support and all the rest of it. I know that, you know, no crocodile tears here, but how dire is it that we keep the Guthrie Center going? Because if we can't keep it going, it closes.
Well, it's closed now. I mean, that's the truth. We have snuck in there to do some, you know, videos and stuff like that, but I probably shouldn't have said that, you know. But, you know, we can get away with getting in and out of there. First of all, we have a key.
Arlo, that could be Alice's Restaurant all over again,
about
how you broke the rule.
Well, the newspaper story of us getting busted in there would be worth a fortune at this point. So we're hoping that that happens. But, you know, aside from kidding around, the truth is, it's been shut since last September, October, something like that.
Sure.
And we're going on a full year of nothing going on. And we have kept a crew there, first of all, with the first package that came from the federal government that kept people's employment happening for a while. But that has run out. And we don't see a light at the end of the tunnel, at least for this year, maybe next year. But the truth is that the Guthrie Center, like a lot of the other venues up here, are seasonal. So we won't even start. We won't even have a chance to get a crowd back in and play the kind of music that you and I love until next June or next July, something like that. So we've got to do something to hold us over.
Well, I do love the Guthrie Center. It's one of the reasons I'm so pleased to be talking about it right now. It is so important for so many of us. So I wanted to ask you about your new record. We call them records, but they're not really records, right?
Nobody makes records anymore. If they do, it's not part of my world. And the truth is that most of, even if they are records or if they're not, the kind of music that generally is produced these days are very formulated. The music industry and the people who make it have figured out, you know, how to turn it into an algorithm. So it's not really homemade music, the kind that you and I have loved and the kind that we put on at the Guthrie Center over the years. But I got together with a guy I still haven't met, a guy named Jim Wilson, who is mostly a piano player, really great piano player. And I loved his kind of playing. It was very reminiscent to me of like Randy Newman, people who have a sense of American style that is unique in the world. And he was one of those guys. And I called him up and I said, or I actually wrote to him in the email, and I said, "You want to work on a project together even though we've never met?" And he said, "I'm on it." And we put together this old song from Stephen Foster, "Hard Times Come Again No More." And he got together a crew and they did a beautiful video and everybody volunteered their time.
Well, how did you do it? Virtually?
We did it virtually, yeah. I sent him some old MIDI files that I had been saving for 30 years that were on my computers. They were so old I couldn't even open them. I had to buy software to convert them so that I could listen to them these days. And I finally found a program that I could send a file to him. And I said, "This is the style. This is the old Stephen Foster original manuscript as published in 18 whatever it was." And I said, "I want to stick to this as close as possible." There had been some great versions of the song done over the years by many people. Mavis Staples is one example. Ry Cooder is another. People who I had admired stylistically as well as personally. But I wanted to really do something that stuck to the original. And so I sent it to Jim. He worked out an arrangement. He sent it back to me. This is obviously over weeks. And I finally said, "That's the one."
Let us pause in life's pleasures and count its many tears while we all sup sorrow with the poor. There's a song that will linger forever in our ears. Oh, hard times come again no more. 'Tis the song, the sigh of the weary. Hard times come again no more. Many days you have lingered around my cabin door. Oh, hard times come again no more.
So I recorded a vocal to his arrangement, sent it back to him, and he used that to add all the other instrumentation, some great players, Stanley Clark, if people know who that is. I mean, just a wonderful cast of characters, of musicians and singers that I had not met a one of them. I don't know them.
How did you find him in the first place? I mean, you heard somewhere or you saw him somewhere?
Well, these were friends of Jim Wilson's in some way. And they had to do the same thing that we're talking about. They all had to record at home and film themselves at home. And then we had to put it together so that you could see it as well as hear it. And, you know, it had to be mixed for radio, and it also had to be mixed for the video. And it took a while. I mean, it took over a couple of months, but we finally got something together and released it the last day of July a couple of weeks ago.
Well, I have to say, I've always loved that song. It seems to me Pete did it somewhere along the line.
He may have.
I guess he did everything at one point or another, and I thought maybe he did it with you. But in any case, look, this is a great thing that we're going to get a new album from you, and I think it's wonderful. What else you got on the album?
Well, it's mostly a single, because these days nobody makes albums in the same way that nobody makes records. So we only did one song, and what we're really hoping is that if enough people like it, if enough people like what we're doing, there will be a demand for a record, an album. And I would love nothing more than to do it, especially at this age. I mean, I'm 73 now, and, you know, you don't make as many albums as you did back in the day. I haven't made a studio recording in over 10 years. This is the first one, and I'm very proud of it. I didn't think I could do it, frankly.
Yeah, well, listen, Arlo Guthrie, you are something, and the Guthrie Center is such an important part of what we have in the Berkshires. You know,
thank
on
you.
My list of Tanglewood and Jacob's Pillow, the Guthrie Center is right up there. So thanks for everything you're doing, and I know we're all going to want to help. Will there be a GoFundMe page?
No, there's nothing like that. It's just basically what we did was put together a little history of the Guthrie Center. It's iconic. The building, if you see it, And you were around back in 69 when the movie came out of Alice's Restaurant.
Loved it.
It becomes instantly recognizable. And for a lot of younger people over the years, first they hear the song and then they say, oh, somebody made a movie of that? And they go look it up. And there it is.
That's right.
And it's Arthur Penn, who directed such great films like
Bonnie and Clyde.
Bonnie and Clyde, you know, and Little Big Man, things like that.
Sure.
And it was great working with his son, Matthew,
right,
who lives in the same house that his dad and mom lived in Stockbridge. And Matthew and I have become buddies over the years, not just because of the interest in the center, but because of his parents, you know, who were very dear to me. And I thought it would be so much fun to work with him. And so we have. We work with Matthew and some other people that have been closely associated with either me or with the Guthrie Center. And like I said, it's iconic all around the world. And to keep that going, I think, is worth our best effort.
I was standing out in front of it talking to your wonderful George Lee one day, and a group showed up. And it was as if they were coming to the Taj Mahal. They looked at the place.
Well, you know,
Margaret,
what happened to me, too. I was standing out there, and people came, and they didn't even want to go in. They just wanted to stand there and look at it. And I thought, oh, my God, this is turning into something bigger than I thought. But it's become not just iconic, it's become meaningful, especially in the time like this, when the world and especially the country needs to be working off the same page.
And we should say that it is not only a place where great performances happen, the ones I love so much. And my band, the Berkshire Ramblers, has been very lucky to have charity put on it where we're allowed to perform and to put something into the whole thing. But I have to say, you do lunches, you do tutoring, and it's really extraordinary. And Arlo, I want to congratulate you and thank you for doing this talk with me, because we always love having you on, and thanks for being here.
I missed the days when I'd had to go see you in Albany, Alan. So here we are talking on the phone from our homes or whatever, and I just find it incredible. But times have changed. We're making the best of it.
And we'll get through it. Thanks so much, Arlo.
Okay, buddy. Bye.
WAMC's Alan Chartok speaking with songwriter, social commentator, master storyteller, actor, and activist Arlo Guthrie. You can find out more and even help the Guthrie Center at guthriecenter.org. Guthriecenter.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.